people you could think of. In school, the girls had described him as nice. There were worse things you could say about a fella, I suppose. But deep down, Harvey Miller longed, if only for one evening, to be really, truly, terribly, romantically exciting. Well, one day his opportunity arose. It was 1970. Harvey was a semi-struggling young comedy writer, so when he learned that the ABC game show The Dating Game was paying contestants $750 apiece, win or lose, he jumped at the chance to become a contestant. Now, you remember The Dating Game, the one woman and three young men separated by a stage partition, and the woman would ask each of the men questions, and based on their answers, without even seeing them, she would choose one to accompany her on an all-expenses-paid dream date. At any rate, there was Harvey Miller trying to look suave for the show's casting personnel. Mr. Excitement fooled nobody, but he was accepted anyway. He was bachelor number two. Now, the man they'd already signed to appear as bachelor number one was none other than Lee Grosskopf, the pro football quarterback for the New York Giants, a big, hulking, handsome professional athlete. Oh, well, thought Harvey, it was too late to back out now. And anyway, $750 was $750. Then came the day of the show. The lady contestant happened to be a beautiful blonde Hollywood starlet named Christine Schmidler. Harvey's defeat would be all the more agonizing now. One by one, the bachelor contestants, concealed behind the stage wall, were introduced by number and voice, but Harvey picked up on something. Christine's accent was distinctly German. Now, Harvey had been stationed in Germany during the hitch in the army, and he still remembered just enough German to make simple conversation. So when he was introduced as bachelor number two, he said, "Good day, my lady, how goes it?" Only he said it in German. "Guten Tag, mein Fräulein. Wie geht's?" The starlet giggled, obviously charmed. And at once a powerful feeling of confidence surged through Harvey. Summoning all of his comedic wit, he dazzled his young actress with clever interjections and lively answers to less than brilliant questions. At one point, he admonished a fellow contestant for being rude to my date, and the audience roared. And when asked to describe the bachelor to his left, Harvey replied that Hitler was not hiding in Argentina after all. Well, as by now you may have guessed, Harvey Miller got the girl. He triumphed over pro quarterback Lee Grosskopf. He, unexciting Harvey, suddenly exceptionally exciting, was eagerly chosen by a gorgeous young Hollywood actress to be her escort for the evening. After a while, Harvey's professional struggle stopped as well. In fact, it was this same Harvey Miller who wrote and co-produced the original motion picture Private Benjamin, for which he also received an Oscar nomination. And still he lists among the greatest victories of his entire life that first shot at the spotlight back in 1970 when he beat a big, good-looking football player on The Dating Game and when he won the lovely prize. Now you know. Oh, by the way, quarterback Lee Grosskopf was bachelor number one. Harvey Miller was bachelor number two. I don't think I mentioned that bachelor number three, who was competing at the same time for the same girl, got no attention at all. He, bachelor number three, was a 34-year-old actor named Burt Reynolds. That's right, the Burt Reynolds. Now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Okay, we're back, and the phone lines are open, 238-5775. The last caller brought up, he didn't think the states could be subject to the Insurrection Act. I'm not a lawyer, okay? I don't know. But I would surmise this. You would have the president declare a state of national emergency. And when he does that, you have a lot more flexibility in your employment laws. Secondly, you would not see federal troops engaged like you did in Little Rock, Arkansas, unless there was actually an armed threat that law enforcement couldn't handle. You would see U.S. Marshals walking into the governor's office in the state of California, putting the governor, Governor Newsom, in handcuffs, the mayor of Los Angeles, the mayor of San Francisco, whomever. You know, if they refuse, they'd be told, this is what the law is. If you interfere with our ability to do our job, we're going to charge you with interfering in the ability of an officer, a federal officer, to perform his duties. Just like if I stood in front of a federal marshal or an FBI agent and I said, you're not going through this door, and I blocked his way, I'd be in handcuffs in about 3 nanoseconds, maybe 2. The same thing applies to them. Just because they are elected officials doesn't mean they're immune from the law. They get arrested all the time, usually for corruption. But in this case, it would be for another charge. Now, I don't know if that would work, but I sure would like to see it tried. I'm really sick of these people blocking things being done. Chicago mayor is a classic example. He's got people in his city coming to city council and public comment begging him to do something because they are hurting. They've got crime, violent crime. These street gangs have moved into their communities. Aid and resources supposed to use for their communities are going into illegal immigrants. I think Chicago spent $500 million, that's with a B, billion dollars, housing and taking care of these people. New York City's taking something similar as that. No federal aid for that. The bottom line is, he refuses to do it. In fact, he ordered police to clear the room, get these citizens of Chicago, these pesky citizen taxpayers, out of the city council meeting because they're annoying him. He didn't want to hear any more from them, and he threw them out this week. I mean, that's the kind of arrogance you've got. Guys like that, please stand up in front of a federal marshal and tell him he can't do his job. I'm going to watch that on the nightly news. I think it'd be kind of interesting to see. Okay, government shutdown. Well, we got 8 hours to go. They had a 1,500-page boondoggle that nobody knew what was in it until Elon Musk and Ramaswamy got together, I guess, and they told people what was in it, and Trump found out. He was furious, and they called the speaker and their congressman and said, look, I don't want this massive spending bill going forward when I take office. And so that bill went to the side, and the Democrats are out there blaming Trump, blaming Elon Musk. But you have a right to know, because nobody was telling you, the weekend before Christmas, that this is what they put in there. They supposedly had a $60,000 pay raise for Congress. Turns out to be a $6,600 pay raise, and that was supposed to help them out. But the bottom line is there was a lot of stuff in there that had no business being in there for a contending resolution to keep the government functioning. Now, who gets hurt? If they actually shut down, who gets hurt? Most of us won't notice it immediately. Employees will be told on a weekend, you don't come back to work on Monday unless we call you and tell you that, the budget's back in place. But they get furloughed. But they all get paid eventually. Now, what happens to the people who really get hurt are junior enlisted personnel in the military? A lot of them, about half of them are married. A lot of them live off post because there's not government housing available and they have rent to pay. And they've had their mid-month pay on the 15th of the month, but now on the 1st of the month, the rent comes due. They have car payments. They have utility bills that have to be paid. If they're not getting paid because there's no check automatically deposited in their bank and it's all electronic deposits, they could have some real problems. A lot of these kids live paycheck to paycheck. They don't have a lot of money left at the end of the month, especially after Christmas. And if you have a late car payment, wreck your credit rating, you got to tell the landlord, gee, might be late with the rent. And hopefully he's not going to get after them too much, but a little sympathetic. Some are better than others. It just creates a lot of problems, not to mention feeding your kids, making sure the other bills are paid and things like that. It's not right. These guys get paid $174,000 a year in Congress. They know what the impact of these things are, and they're playing chicken with each other at the expense of a lot of other people. We have a caller, so I'm going to go back to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make my comment about the Democrat Party. I've said it before, but the limit of which they show in their hatred for America as we know it. I mean, they're okay with America as long as they can change it the way Obama wanted to do in the first place. And so thinking about how they've taken this material that we've had sitting in storage to build the wall to control the immigration coming from the south border, and they're just selling it, pennies on the dollar. And then what I heard just the other day, Biden is canceling the student loan debt on a certain number of students. I'm without words when it comes to the fact that he must absolutely try to give Trump the biggest garbage mess he can come up with. He okays long distance missiles to shoot into Moscow. he left the whole Middle East in a fire. This man is doing everything. Well, you know what? It's not Biden. It's the people that have been controlling the Democrat, you know, Biden administration all this time, telling us and lying the whole time, all those Democrats, Schumer along with the rest of them, that, you know, Biden is just fine. He's never been better. And it's an ongoing, you know, lie to the American people. Democrat Party should be banned. That they should be, if anything, tried for treason, tried, at least criminally tried, because they hate our country. They do. They hate it the way it is. And then on top of everything else, they're totally destroying the American dollar. And you know what? Everything revolves around the money. Everything does. And so I was just thinking the other day, you know, you notice how the stock market is going up and up and up, when in reality, the incomes are not going up. You know, we're paying a lot more for everything, and yet the market is going up. And they call it a bubble. Well, you know what bubbles do? They burst. Right. Yeah, they reach a certain point. And it's not going to be slow. It's not going to be progressive. It's going to be all of a sudden you're going to find out the banks are closed and your money just got absorbed by the government.
Well, I've been through two of them. You've probably been at least through two of them, too, and they're not pleasant. It took years to recover from the collapse of 2008. I mean, it took my family a better part of 4 or 5 years before we were able to get back on an even keel. And it happened to a lot of people, so...
Yeah, and you know, if you remember, you know, Obama was like at the helm when that happened. You know, yep. I know George W. Bush handed him a hot potato, and you know, he was going to be our savior instead of standing up to the financial crisis we were in. He used a term called too big to fail. He bailed out all those criminals. He bailed them all out because they're too big to
bail. No, he didn't bail out Lehman Brothers, and that's the one that basically broke the dam. When that one didn't happen, the dam burst. But the seeds for that were sown back in the Clinton administration with things that he did to the real estate market and banking. And, you know, those policies don't take effect right away, but bad policy has a tendency to, you know, poison everything, kind of like, you know, mold in a barrel of flour or something. So that's kind of what's happened.
The sacrificial lamb. You have to have a sacrificial lamb. You got to have a scapegoat. You got to be able to, you know, basically blame it on someone. And the Democrat Party's been very good at that. You know, look at January 6th, what they've done with that. You know, these people are criminals.
You got Elizabeth Warren, you know, she's probably, you know, she's supposedly smart, but she's one of the dumbest people in the Congress. And unfortunately, stupidity isn't a crime. If it was a crime, she would have been convicted and sent off to some loony island a long time ago. But her policies are always anti-business, anti-corporation. Let's put these really draconian rules into place, and then they cause the whole system to collapse. They don't work. Not the way they're supposed to, anyway. They never do. And the result is, when you've got government trying to run the economy, things don't turn out so well. They don't turn out well at all. Especially when you've got people that don't understand.
Government is always at the root of financial problems. If you let the market do what it does, that they have a sense of what money is and how far you can push it. But the government has no sense at all when it comes to money.
People need to go back and study. When you study the 19th century, you know, what the government did, and trying to manipulate currency and the gold standard and the silver standards and things like that. And they caused one big massive depression after another, collapses and everything else because of what they did. Now, they had some bad bank policies back then, too. But the bottom line is, you know, it's like getting a committee to design a horse. You come up with a camel or something worse. They just don't seem to have the knowledge and the expertise on how to do it. And, you know, the best thing I can tell people is make sure you're diversified as much as you possibly can, because these things are bad. And the government is spinning us into oblivion to the point where we can't pay our national debt. We can't pay the interest payments and things like that. And if they ever default on the debt, you're talking about total chaos in this country. Everything falls apart.
It will not only be in this country. It will send off a domino effect around the entire world.
Yep. And people die when you have those things. You have wars, you have revolutions, you have famines. You know, starvation occurs, things like that. And you go back and you look at, you know, history of the last 500 years, how governments have fouled these kinds of things up. it's really kind of a frightening thing. And right now, our debt has ballooned to a degree that I never imagined possible, especially since it's only been 24 years. And we had, when Bush 2 came into office, there was $5 trillion of debt in this country. And that was accumulated debt from the time George Washington was president to the time that Bush took office in 2001. And what is it now? $36 trillion and counting? It's incredible how much debt we've accrued. And we've got, you know, the interest on the debt now exceeds the defense budget. So we are in big trouble, and I know they've got to cut spending, and it's going to be an ugly process. And a lot of people here just stop spending more money than they take in for a start, just to get that on an even keel, and then take it from there. It's going to take a long, long time to pay that down, but at least keep everything from falling apart. And Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, that's where the money goes. That's where most of the spending is at. Those are entitlements. And somehow we got to persuade the American people in the next 7 or 8 years, we're going to have to make some real serious changes to that, because if they don't, Social Security, I think in 2033, everybody gets a 20% cut in their Social Security benefits just because there's no money to pay it because of what the current debt structure is going to be. And I can't imagine what's going to be. I think it's like $50 billion by 20, well, it's going to be more faster than that, actually. $50 trillion in debt before the mid-century. This is an incredible amount of money we're spending.
I'm inclined to think it'll be a lot sooner than that.
Probably will.
Every time the government comes up with any kind of number or projection, they're always wrong. And so, you know, here's what it really comes down to. This is a big question. America, the voters, we know about this big debt bubble, and yet we haven't held them accountable. We keep voting in the same losers. It's almost like we're going to get what we deserve. When you live beyond your means, even the private credit system in America is way over what I'm sure they'll never pay it. It's going to be a financial blow-up.
It is. You know, I got some other calls that came in, and we got to probably take them. But, you know, you got a good point, and we are in big trouble, and it's really a scary thing. But thank you for your call.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Okay, that caller dropped. I'm sorry that you got dropped. Please call us back, 238-5775. The line's clear. And anyway, this is a big deal. The shutdown is a bigger deal than people know. I know the way it's being done is bad. It makes me angry, but people need to realize, you know, you voted for President Trump, but you didn't send him a Congress that could work with him. You know, we may control the House and the Senate next time, like in a couple of weeks, but the reality is there's only a 2 or 3 vote margin each one. In the midterms, the way things got done in the past, you know, when the Democrats really screwed up, the Republicans come in, they came with a 20, 30 vote margin over top. We're getting 2 and 3 votes, and this has happened for 2 election cycles in a row, so it tells me the last election was an anti-Biden, let's get Trump back in their vote, but everything else stays the same. And that didn't work too good. And that's why we got this gridlock in the Congress. Everything comes out of the House for budgets. The Senate has to approve it. And Schumer, who runs the Senate right now, Democrat, is saying, oh, we're going to work on judges today. We're not doing anything. We sent you a deal. You blew it up. You fix it. And they're kind of ignoring the problem. And that's the other problem, part of the problem we've got. The U.S. Senate, you know, no matter what the House does, the Senate has to come back and come up and agree to it, and they've got to reconcile that, then the president has to sign it. And if that doesn't happen, you don't have a budget. The government basically shuts down, and we're less than 8 hours away from that right now. And it closes, basically shuts down at midnight tonight, and we'll see what happens. And unfortunately, like I said, junior enlisted people get hurt. Eventually, other payments won't be made. You know, they're going to close the parks and stuff like that. You know, don't plan on going to D.C. to see the lights or anything else. They'll probably have some horrible system in place where they'll make it as miserable as possible for the American people, and then try to blame the Republicans. In fact, Salud Carbajal, your congressman, has a little text out today already blaming Republicans for everything, and it's all their fault. Never mind the money they put in there. So anyway, we have a lot of problems in this country. We've got a cultural decline that is unbelievable at this point. This really bothers me. You know, there's something really wrong in this country. People seek online fame at everything. You've got young people who are thinking, about a third of them think shooting Brian Thompson, the CEO of the insurance company United Healthcare, was okay. to be stalked and shot, even though the guy had nothing to do with his company, either he or his mother. They had no claims, nothing denied. They weren't insured by them. He just picked him at random. Insurance executive tracked him down, stalked him, and murdered him in cold blood, leaving behind a widow and two sons, two teenage sons, before Christmas, without their father. Just because he felt he could do it, he was justified. And a third of American young people under the age of 30 think it might be okay. You got other things wrong with this culture right now. Online fame, you know, let's win a popularity contest. I couldn't win a ugly dog contest when I was in high school, but I want to get on the internet and make myself as disgusting as I possibly be, and people will pay me thousands of dollars to click onto my website. I mean, there's a case, there's a woman, someone refers to herself as fatty, and she just basically stuffs herself with food online as she talks. Thinking somehow that's great, and her lifestyle gives her a reason, doesn't have to move at all, doesn't have to do anything, and she just gobbles down everything in sight, and that's supposedly okay while interacting somehow with her viewers. There's another one that's even worse. This is a woman, I guess, over in England. She's a 22-year-old model named Lily Phillips. She's like been in the porn industry, apparently, for several years. It's kind of pathetic. How does a 23-year-old girl get caught up into that for years? She has a goal for herself. She's publicly announced her current life goal. She wants to break a world record. She wants to break the world record for number of sexual partners in 24 hours. Her goal is 1,000. I guess the previous record was 900 and some, which is beyond me. But, you know, she wants, right now, she just reached part of her goal, like a trial run. She broke a record. She had a personal record. She had 100 sexual partners in 24 hours. What's wrong with these people? What's wrong with men who want to have sex with a woman who's had 100 partners in 24 hours? It's pretty sick. It's really sick. But right now, shameful behavior makes you a star. You know, it's like the Jerry Springer live on the internet 24/7. Let's think how gross, how obnoxious, and how obscene we can possibly be. And that's really sad, you know, and this has kind of happened before. I'm going to go back to Christmas a little bit. You know, Christmas wasn't always, you know, this celebration of the birth of Christ or anything like that. It wasn't always religious. It wasn't always kind of uplifting and a hopeful time for a lot of people. Go back to some newspaper articles on this. Well, we got a break coming up. I can hear some music, but we'll get back to that in a minute. I want to try to get a little bit uplifting, and we'll get back to that in a few minutes.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Elizabeth McDonald, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages ending higher for the day, but down for the week after the Fed's preferred inflation gauge barely budged last month, a sign that price pressures are easing. The milder inflation figures come a couple of days after the Fed rocked financial markets by saying that they will slash their key interest rate just two times next year, down from their previous forecast of four. All of the 11 S&P 500 sectors finished higher, with tech leading the charge and Apple notching a new record close. It's also triple witching time, and options tied to more than $6 trillion in stocks, exchange-traded funds, and index expired today. The Dow winners, Goldman Sachs, United Health Group, and American Express. The Dow decliners, Merck, Microsoft, and Walmart. The Dow up 498 points, the Nasdaq higher by 200, S&P 500 up 64. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
This year, American farmers will harvest 2.8 billion bushels of wheat and 15.1 billion bushels of corn. And to this day, American road workers have built 4.2 million miles of roads and counting. We're proud that John Deere machines rolling off the line here in the USA play a part in supporting Americans who work the land and build a better tomorrow. Nothing runs like a Deere. Learn more at johndeere.com/manufacturing.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Wesley with Stove and Spa Center. It's finally getting cool, and we don't want to leave you out in the cold. Stove and Spa Center has a great selection of stoves, inserts, and fireplaces to get you warm and cozy in your house this winter. Don't miss savings on freestanding stoves, gas inserts, and fireplaces. How would you like being warmer this winter and save money too? It's possible with a fireplace insert from Cozy Heat. Cozy Heat's highly efficient gas inserts and fireplaces come in many styles to fit any home's decor. Save big on Cozy Heat fireplaces and inserts during Stove and Spa Center's Big Autumn Sale. All products we offer are on our website at stoveandspa.com. Save big on Cozy Heat fireplaces and inserts during Stove and Spa Center's Big Autumn Sale going on right now. Don't miss out on all the special offers at Stove and Spa Center. 7485 El Camino Real, Atascadero between Curb Rail and Moore Roads.
Now playing at the Park Cinemas in downtown Paso Robles, working together to evade a deadly foe. Mufasa the Lion King in 2D and 3D, rated PG. The family comedy adventure Sonic the Hedgehog 3, rated PG. And Friendship is Tested in the fantasy drama Wicked, rated PG. For complete showtimes and information, go to parkcinemas.com. And as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy a movie or two at the Park Cinemas in downtown Paso Robles.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Okay, we're back, and the phone lines are open, 238-5775. Before I go back to the Christmas thing, I want to put something out there. There is a couple of bills I want you to think about supporting. It's called the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act, and it's under Senate Bill 1669 and House Resolution 3413. Contact your congressman, contact your senators. What's happening is BMW, Ford, and Tesla are with their electric vehicles, new vehicles coming out, are planning to eliminate AM radio in your vehicles. You will not be able to. This station's an AM station. A lot of conservative talk radio, rural areas, emergency services, there's a lot of things involved AM radio that's essential. And people have rallied. This is bipartisan bills, by the way. It's not a Republican versus Democrat. This is a business community trying to do one thing that's not in the interest of the American people. You need AM radio for a lot of reasons. You would be able to get channels like this, but you'd have to subscribe to it via streaming services. Of course, an earthquake, first thing that goes out of the cell towers, you won't be able to hear anything. This is a national security issue as well. Congress is trying to fix it by requiring automakers, manufacturers, cars sold in the United States to have an AM radio in their car, have that available. Now, why wouldn't they want to do it? Because you have electric vehicles, somehow the AM radio and electric vehicles are not compatible. It interferes with the signal. So they make it easier for themselves, but at the expense of a lot of people. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Al. How's it going there?
Okay. How's it going with
Good. Say, Kevin plays a show at midnight. It's called Our American Stories. Have you heard of it or have you listened to it?
No, I have not.
Well, anyway, I was listening to it one time, and they had the most interesting story. It was about George Wallace, the racist man who at one time was a racist that you were talking about earlier.
Right.
Well, anyway, like you said, oh, he was a top racist. But I'm trying to. But anyway, he ended up finally becoming the best friend of the black people. He went to, I think they said that he went to some black church down where he was at, I think Mississippi or wherever, and just became, and just didn't want to be a racist anymore. And that's when the black people ended up going Democratic, I think.
Well, they became Democrats before that. They were already that. From the time Roosevelt became president, pretty much. Republicans didn't do what they should have done for them, but we lost the black vote probably back in the 1930s because of the New Deal and things like that. And Eleanor Roosevelt was reaching out to the black community a lot. She did a lot to promote them. But it wasn't until Ronald Reagan came around, though, that the White House staff, the servants they had there in the quarters, most of whom were black, received a pay raise after like 30 years or something.
What it said was that when George Wallace was a racist, all the black people were Republicans, so they just hated the Democrats, and that's what they said. And then another thing, what they said was that George Wallace, he teamed up with it was a Republican female senator, I believe, a senator. Mm. I think she was a senator, real well-known name in history, but I can't remember her name. She may have been the mm-hmm. first female senator. But anyway, the farmers were hurting back then at that time. And that woman, Senator, and George Wallace, they teamed up together, and that's when food stamps began, was back okay. then. That's what they said on Our American Story. If people can, it was so interesting. I think that the show about George Wallace on Our American Stories, I think it went on for an hour. It was so interesting hearing about his life.
Well, people do change. They really do. Just because you were one thing when you were 20s doesn't mean the same thing in your 60s or 70s. And he had a pretty interesting life and a traumatic life. He was actually tried to kill him. There was an assassination attempt on him in 1972, I believe, which paralyzed him. So he had a pretty traumatic experience as well. So anyway, thanks for that information.
Yeah, I'd recommend people listen to that if they can.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Good
idea.
Have a good Christmas.
All right. You too. Merry Christmas.
You too.
All right. Speaking of Christmas, I want to go back to Christmas and talk about that. You know, Christmas wasn't always this hopeful, wonderful thing. In fact, in the 19th century, Christmas it lost its religious significance. Calvinists and the Pilgrims, for instance, they did not like it at all, the Enlightened thinkers. It was actually illegal to celebrate Christmas in the United States originally, back in the early 1600s and early 1700s, because basically it was a riot. In Great Britain, the 12 days of Christmas were marked by vandalism, interruption of church services, attacks on religious and racial minorities, and urban gangs bent on mayhem. It was a season for brazen demands by the unwashed of society to go around and basically demand money from prosperous citizens or do actual home invasions of middle-class families, beat people up and things like that, basically a drunken brawl. So people weren't all that enthralled with Christmas. So you get into the early 1820s, and there was an effort to basically rehabilitate Christmas by bringing in Santa Claus and things like that. So anyway, that happened then, but what really turned it around big time in the United States and in Britain at the same time was Charles Dickens and his book, The Christmas Carol. Because until that time, you had charity wasn't a big deal. You had a lot of poverty in the streets and things like that, people really hurting. I'm losing my train of thought here. Oh, okay. Anyway, you had a lot of poverty. Just like it shows in The Christmas Carol, you know, go out and get a job. Don't we have lots of vacancies in the workhouses, that kind of thing. And, you know, Scrooge was pretty much the norm in the business community. And people didn't realize that. Well, he wrote that book, The Christmas Carol, became an instant overnight bestseller. They sold out the copies. And charitable giving in Britain just soared. It eventually soared in the United States, too. It just changed people's mind about what it should be like. Basically, just, you know, you had Santa Claus also as a magical gift bringer and things like that. That came from Dutch traditions. But the combination of those things, orienting it towards family, orienting it towards children, that was a really big change in the way it came about. And that came about because of the royal family. You had Prince Albert, who was the husband of Queen Elizabeth, Queen Victoria, not Elizabeth, Queen Victoria. And he was from Germany, and he brought German Christmas traditions. He introduced the Christmas tree, for instance, into English and American society. It was in the Windsor Castle, where they lived at the time, and a whole bunch of them, actually. And really changed the way the royal family celebrated Christmas. Everybody looked at it and said, well, that's really neat. Let's do that, too. People began to emulate the royal family and what they were doing, and they introduced it with Christmas trees, orienting the holiday towards family traditions, introducing turkey as the main meal at Christmas time for a lot of people, if you could afford them. Just really changing the whole focus. Children, religious focus of it, everything changed because of that. They also went back, and you had a music revival when people went back and started to revive old English Christmas carols from the countryside. Things like The First Noel, God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, I Saw Three Ships Coming Sailing In, Good King Wenceslas, Good Christian Men Rejoice, and so on. But that was really what made it take off. And, of course, we've kind of come full circle now in a lot of ways. Christmas is very, very commercial, with a lot of movies laughing at ourselves about how commercial it is, like from Christmas with the Cranks, or they had an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, I forgot the name, Jingle All the Way or something like that. Just one thing after another. It's all about presents. What can I get? Me, me, me. And how many Christmas lights we can put up, you know, these outrageous displays that could light up a whole city, have a new power plant, and all the lights people put on. And I don't care how many lights you put on your house. That's fine. I got a lot on mine, too. But it's not about that. Christmas is not about how many lights. It's not about how many presents we give. The first Christmas was about an infant in a manger with no place to sleep. It was about a Savior coming into the world, a world that didn't, was so evil, didn't know it had to be saved. It needed a Savior who gave everything he could in the course of his life to humanity, starting with his life. And that's what it's all about. You know, it's about the Gospels of Christ, in which you find in the books of Matthew and the other Gospels that are there. So don't forget that, and don't forget charity, and don't forget those who are less fortunate than yourselves. But, and then they had a letter. It was an interesting that came out. Back in 1897, you had a little girl named Virginia, Virginia O'Hanlon. She, I'm not going to say which city she lived in, but her father's a doctor. And her little classmates were basically asking her or telling her that there was no Santa Claus. So he said, well, write a letter to the Sun, which was the main newspaper of the day, because if it's in the Sun, it must be true. So she wrote a letter asking if there really was a Santa Claus. And that was interesting. It was it's probably the most popular republished column that's ever been written. And that's an interesting to read. But she said, is there a Santa Claus? So she wrote a letter to the Sun, and the Sun came back a couple of months later, a couple of weeks later, actually, 416 words, and printed it without a byline. And this is what it basically said. It said, dear editor, I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there's no Santa Claus. Papa says, if you see it in the Sun, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Virginia O'Hanlon, 115 West 95th Street. This was the response. Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age, do not believe except they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant, and his intellect is compared with the boundless world about him as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give your life its highest beauty and glory. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith, then no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world will be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus. You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would they prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not, but that's no proof that they are not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders that are unseen and unseeable in the world. You may tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world, which not the strongest man or even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernatural beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world, there's nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus, thank God. He lives, and he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, maybe 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood. And with that, I wish you a Merry Christmas. So, that being said, you know, there's more to this world than what you can see. Faith is important. Belief is important. And the realization that, you know, the wonders that God has prepared for us have not even entered, cannot be seen or heard or even imagined or entered the heart of man. So that's what Christmas is really all about. And we forget that a lot. Anyway, I'll go back to the bad news of the day. We can talk about the bad news all day. I hope somebody gives a call. The lines are open at the moment, 238-5775. Got a break coming up in 60 seconds, so I'll just go over a couple of these things. Luigi Mangione, murderer of United Health, alleged murderer of CEO Brian Thompson. It's more than a criminal case, it's a test of America's ability to distinguish right from wrong. At this point, far too many Americans have flunked that test. And the author of that, Matthew Continetti, has this to say: the moment you let morality out the door, the second you rationalize terrorism, you open yourself to nihilism and self-destruction. It's the lesson of radical politics from the Jacobins to Al-Qaeda. And if you don't know who the Jacobins are, you go back to the French Revolution. The guys that basically responsible for the execution of about 36,000 people in France, including most of them who founded the revolution. An accusation was simply enough to get you to the guillotine, and there was no defense permitted, because if you're accused, you were guilty. And that's how it worked. To Al-Qaeda, you know, who blew up the World Trade Center towers. Let's go back to the phones. When we get back, we got a short break. Be back shortly.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers.
Hey there, glad you could make it. Come on in.
Wow, your kitchen looks amazing. So does your whole house.
Thanks. We just had our cabinets refinished by Peek Painting. They did such a fantastic job, we had them come back and paint our whole living area.
I guess you could say they have your stamp of approval.
Yes, sir. Just like everyone else on Google and Yelp. Booking a quote is easy. Just go to peakpainting.com. That's peekpainting.com. And book a time and day that fits your schedule. No back and forth phone tag. Just click and book.
Sounds too easy.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peek Painting at peekpainting.com.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We moved from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location, Paso Robles, refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy, 805-239-0616, or go online, DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Since 1966, Hammond Overhead Door Company has provided residential garage doors that offer more than just a strong and secure way to close your garage. They also add beauty and value to your home. Hammond Overhead Door has the right garage door to complement your home and your budget. Hammond Overhead Door Company. Call 238-0524 or go to HammondOverheadDoor.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
The Paso Robles Downtown Main Street Association would like to say thank you to all those who volunteered and participated in their events this year. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from the Paso Robles Downtown Main Street Association.
Okay, we're back, and the phone lines are open, 238-5775. You know, what's happened in Magdeburg, Germany today is pretty appalling. It's happened before, unfortunately. A driver drove a vehicle into the market. Now they're thinking it was deliberate. That's really tragic. The motive behind there, I don't know. If you're not familiar with Germany and the Chris Kindle March, they're really special. They're usually held in the town square. They have cobblestones, big squares. In the summertime, they have people out there, have, you know, round tables, umbrellas. People sit there, drink coffee, pastries, and things like that, just socialize. But they're usually in an area maybe, you know, maybe 50 yards, 100 yards by 50 yards, something like that. It's a town square. It really is. Now, I just described a rectangle, but the reality is they're old-fashioned kind of places. They're filled with lights and Christmas ornaments, all kinds of decorations. They have all kinds of food and mulled wine and spiced wine, things like that. And there's a lot of sights and smells are great, especially in the evening. Daytime, too, but especially at night, and they're all lit up. And the Germans have been doing this for quite a long time, over 100 years, obviously, since they celebrated Christmas. And children especially enjoy them. They're designed for children in a lot of ways. You see lots of kids there. Now, they had one of these events in the past, a truck bomb about 8 or 10 years ago, that killed a lot of people. This one killed one person so far. They're saying maybe other deaths, at least 50 people injured. And that is really tragic. That is the dark side of our world. And they're trying to take the light and the hope and the faith away of a lot of people, especially kids, and just ruin it for people. I'm not going to speculate on who the perpetrators did it or why. You can read that in the papers. It'll come out probably in the next day or two, and they'll find out why this occurred. But these things happen, and we live in a dark world, and Christmas provides hope for a lot of people. That's what it's really all about, just a reminder of what it's all about. And don't let these kinds of events, you know, darken it for you. They do happen. There's always been poor. We talk about charity at Christmas. Well, why are people poor? Why are people in despair? It's an opportunity for you to reach out to other people. And when I've always made it a habit. You go buy a red kettle. You don't pass a red kettle with somebody ringing the bell without putting something in it, however small it is. I used to ring the bell in front of Kmart when we had a Kmart in Atascadero. I used to have fun doing it, and I loved it when little kids came up, and they had a big smile on their face, and they put in their quarters, or maybe their mom would give them a dollar bill or something like that to put in. And that was just kind of neat, you know. It was kind of a warm feeling. I mean, I wasn't warm. I was freezing out there usually, but that's why you move around a lot and ring those bells pretty hard. But, you know, the reality is it's just a really special time. It's an opportunity for us to reach out to other people and remember, one, to be thankful for our own position, that we're in a good enough position, we can do something like that for someone else, but also to help those people who are in need and not have a cold heart. That's why bad things happen sometimes. There are opportunities for people to do things for other people and just show the love of a God who was real, who was there. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, especially on the radio. But, you know, that's just it. They can always fire me, I guess, if they don't like that. But the reality is, you know, don't pass those red kettles because there's a lot of people hurting. You know, I've mentioned it in the past that people out here, they had Hurricane Helene come through at the end of September, just devastated Western North Carolina. There's a lot of people there that still are hurting really bad. You know, I know that FEMA came through and they gave vouchers for hotels 100 miles away. Oh, by the way, the people who are hurting in the hotel vouchers 100 miles away, their car was destroyed too. They don't have any way of going anywhere. They're living in tents besides basically blasted out communities by the floods that came through. The flash floods and mud flows were horrendous. Landslides come roaring down the mountainsides with, you know, if they get 20 inches of rain in one night, it doesn't leave a lot left. And just came through and just wiped out everything. And they're going to be hurting for a long time. So, you know, there's organizations that are still there. You know, Salvation Army is still there. Samaritan's Purse is still there. FEMA has left. They've done what they can legally do, basically taking claims and trying to help people within the limits of the law, what they're allowed to do. They're not 100% agency going to make you 100% well. Most businesses that get destroyed, even with insurance, usually fail within 2 years, whether it's a structure fire or a flood or anything else. A lot of businesses aren't going to be there anymore. Whole lives have been upended. So this is something to remember, you know, when you're sitting around your family, your dinner time at Christmas, you're watching your kids open their presents under the tree, just take a moment and think about it. There's a lot of people who are still hurting. And just say them a little prayer, but also if you can do something more material helping them, don't forget them. They're always going to be there, and as Christ said, the poor will always be with us. It's just something for us to think about and to do and be grateful for what we've got. And be grateful for the blessings you have, the things that have not happened to you. Everybody has trouble in their lives. Sometimes people get sick. There's deaths in the families. These things happen. You know, the world doesn't stop turning because it's Christmas. So just remember those who don't have as much as you do and be a little bit grateful. We talk about this sometimes at Thanksgiving, but Christmas is kind of a universal thing in the United States. You know, it's kind of part of our culture, part of our traditions, and that's just who we are. Now, a lot of countries don't have anything like that. It's kind of an every man, woman for themselves kind of mentality. Get everything you possibly can for yourself while you can, and then lord it over everybody else. That's not our way. That's not our cultural heritage. We came from a Judeo-Christian background. That doesn't mean everybody's Jewish or Christian, but that's our foundation stones for the republic that was laid. And it's kind of a cultural tradition in this country of who we are and the values that we have. We may not have always celebrated Christmas, but the values we have are reflected in how we celebrate Christmas now. Okay, some other things. Back to politics, our favorite subject. There was some good news for Trump. He got an early Christmas present. Fannie Willis, the district attorney of Fulton County, Georgia, district attorney, was basically told by the Georgia Appeals Court that she could no longer, nor could her office, can be participate in any prosecutions of Donald Trump over election issues from the 2020 election. So, for now, at least, that's one hurdle has overcome, unless she appeals it to the Supreme Court and they reinstate her. Not likely to do that because they were pretty strongly worded statements about her conflict of interest, and her appearance of conflict of interest were so strong they can't be remedied by any other means except saying, okay, you can't play in this game anymore. You're basically disqualified, like we would normally do to an athlete who cheats. And she kind of did that. I'm not going to talk about the post-Christmas culture we have. We know we have that at this point. There was a small victory for religious freedom. The city of Seattle has been told they definitely infringed on Pastor Matthew Meineke's First Amendment rights. He had committed the heinous crime of reading a Bible out loud during a Seattle pro-abortion rally. He held up a sign and handed out faith-based literature. He was attacked by pro-abortion demonstrators. He was knocked down. His materials were taken out of his hands. His Bible was ripped up. When the Seattle police arrived, they promptly arrested the pastor for being there. They cited the protest, ordered him to leave. He didn't do it. The police arrested him for reading a Bible, not the people who beat him up. Well, the Supreme Court, Ninth U.S. Court of Appeals, a very liberal court, came back, ruled in his favor, saying restrictions on his speech and content-based heckler's vetoes where officers curbed his speech once the audience's hostile reaction manifested. Meineke established irreparable harm because a loss of First Amendment freedoms constitutes an irreparable injury, and the balance of equities and public interest favors Meineke. Bottom line is this, you have rights as long as you stand up for those rights. He did so. He probably had to go to jail. He probably had to endure some humiliating circumstances and cost some money. But in the end, he was vindicated. And he can go back now and ask for restitution from the city of Seattle for his injuries and the way his officers treated him. So I just say, city managers, talk to your police chiefs about your officers. Make sure they understand what the Constitution means and what the First Amendment means. You don't get to arrest a pastor for simply standing there reading a Bible, especially if you have an angry crowd that's trying to beat him up or actually does so. They will do this as long as you allow them to do that. You will have violence as long as you tolerate violence from one side or the other. Those are the kind of things that, you know, you have to stand up for. Freedom isn't free. It's a cliche to a lot of people. We talk about it in terms of the military, but that's true. Fighting for freedom doesn't mean you put on a uniform and you take a rifle and bayonet and go to a foreign land and carry out American foreign policy. It means you stand up for it in your backyard at home, with your communities and your churches and your synagogues and everything else. And if you don't stand up for it, you will lose it. Because that's what we lost long before we have a military defeat overseas, when you simply allow your rights to be trampled on and people to take those rights from you. There's a lot of things that there, you know, cost of living is up a little bit more. It's not going to go down for a while. It's going to take a long time to fix these things. There's another environmental mandate put out by the Biden administration that's going to do a lot to sabotage the incoming Trump administration, and, you know, another EV mandate, California, like EV rules for the whole country is going to be difficult. National security, China's on the march. What else is new? They got 100 new nuclear warheads added to their hundreds of new missiles they've got. And the Biden approach to all this was to cut the defense budget again this year. I'm not sure how that computes to improving our national defense and making us safer. Ultimate safety doesn't rest with how many tanks or missiles or warships or planes we have. It basically rests in our national character. I think we're running out of time. We are out of time. And I hear the music coming on, so I'm just going to wish everybody a happy new, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I won't be here next week. I'll be off with my family, so I wish you and yours well, and have a safe Merry Christmas as well.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by the Work Family Ranch, the perfect outdoor activity for any level rider. Book your horseback ride today, 805-467-3362, or go to workranch.com.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.